The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. And we'll start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the headline, Only on the Upswing. Golf remains popular in the Triangle, with private clubs now commanding $100,000 to get in. And the article begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with the second headline, Triangle Private Country Clubs hit $100,000 to join. Number of people wanting to be a part of country club life is still growing. And this is written by Cameron Snipes. Initiation fees for full golf memberships among private country clubs in the Triangle have risen exponentially over the past several years. In fact, the median initiation fee for golf membership at Triangle Country Clubs is now around $30,000, up 100% from 2019. And the number of people wanting to be a part of country club life is still growing. That steady membership growth is the theme of Triangle Country Clubs, and it's what is allowing these increases in fees and dues. The area's priciest, according to data from the clubs, is Old Chatham Golf Club in Durham, which now commands an initiation fee of $100,000. The club, situated on 400-plus acres, is a golf-only club on a course designed by Reese Jones. Old Chatham is one of eight local private clubs that increased their initiation fees from last year, according to Triangle Business Journal data. The average increase from a year ago was just under $6,000, and a few even saw jumps of $10,000. And that trend is set to continue, albeit at a slower rate. The growth is a positive trend that has ripple effects across the entire state of North Carolina. According to the state, the golf industry generates about $2.3 billion in direct spending and has a total economic impact of $4.2 billion. Club Benchmarking, a provider of private club-specific business intelligence tools and services, surveyed clubs with golf about their plans for 2025. It found the median planned dues increase is 5%, lower than the 9% seen in 2023, but still above the 3% in 2019 and in the years prior to the pandemic. Typically, capital dues are primarily used to pay for what already exists at the club, but require updates or repairs, such as flooring, roofs, parking lots, or irrigation systems. Initiation fees, meanwhile, are used to pay for aspirational amenities and new projects that add to what is already there and could be a bigger benefit to future members. Durham's Crossdale Country Club funds improvements with a combination of reserves, assessments, and financing. Kim Gansleen, the club's membership director, says. And Crossdale is putting those funds to use as it prepares to unveil a new pool complex, and four new dedicated pickleball courts, all scheduled for completion in about a month. The club also recently added a bunker renovation, expanded its driving range with new mats, constructed a range patio, and added new tees and a par 3 course. These are improvements and amenities, the club says, that are designed to cater to its changing demographic of younger members. We have seen a significant shift in our membership demographic over the past decade, Gansleen said. Our average member's age has dropped by at least 10 years, and we reflect the broader trend of who has moved to the area over the past 5 years, young families and young professionals relocating to the Triangle. Raleigh Country Club, a property of McConnell Golf, has also seen a shift toward younger members. Young families are enjoying the amenities of private club life, McConnell Chief Operating Officer Christian Anastasiadis said. I would say that millennials now make up our largest cohort of new club members. Key areas for recent capital investments at McConnell Golf's Triangle properties have been clubhouses, pickleball courts, pool remodeling, and technology. Reinvesting capital back into the club is key to stay vibrant and relevant, he said. Anastasiadis stressed that all McConnell Golf's club investments are financed through operations. Our clubs have no member assessments, nor do we charge a member capital fund or any sort for our vast annual capital improvements, he said. We just completed a nearly $1 million cart path renovation at RCC, adding that the company recently invested $7.5 million into just its golf courses. Hassentree Golf Club in Wake Forest is also seeing a swell of younger members. Kyle Headley, director of membership at the club, says he onboarded 35% more families under the ages of 40 in 2024 than he did the previous year. Our neighborhood is viewed as a forever home community. We also have strong kids programming, he said. And that growth is not expected to slow anytime soon. Many clubs have wait lists and offer amenities that are not only attracting pure golfers, but other members wanting to take advantage of a club's other offerings. The total economic impact of the club industry on the U.S. was $157 billion in revenue, according to a Club Management Association of America study conducted between November 2023 and April 2024. The region with the largest club industry is the South region, the study found, and the largest drivers of that region were Florida, the Carolinas, and the Atlanta metro area. Our most iconic amenity has always been our golf course, Gansleen said, adding that Crossdale's family lifestyle element is also a major focus. She points to its social events, ever-changing menus, and the pool renovation and a racket sports expansion as major drivers of that. Private clubs have evolved into holistic sanctuaries where members don't just golf and dine. Members today optimize, Anastasiadis said. The club of the future is a life concierge. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by Dane Huffman. Brewgaloo gives craft beer a lift. Huge event in downtown Raleigh comes as breweries see rising financial pressure. North Carolina's craft beer scene has had a tough year, but the beloved part of the state's culture is in the spotlight at as Brewgaloo returns to downtown Raleigh. April 25 and 26, Brewgaloo, a key fundraiser for Shop Local Raleigh, is the state's largest craft beer festival and will feature 91 breweries. That number is down slightly from the all-time high of 115 and the usual number of around 100. Jennifer Martin, executive director of Shop Local Raleigh, said that reflects the challenges the industry is facing as some have gone out of business, some are facing staffing shortages, and those in the mountains are still recovering from Hurricane Helene. Still, Brewgaloo's statewide scope remains impressive. Martin said the festival started as a Triangle-focused event, but the brewers involved wanted to include their friends at other breweries around the state. They don't see each other as competition, she said. They play well together in the sandbox. Coming from the booming craft beer scene in Charlotte are Noda Brewing Company, Sycamore Brewing, and Sugar Creek Brewing Company. The event includes Appalachian Mountain Brewery from Boone and Wrightsville Beach Brewery. All that, of course, is exposure for the breweries, who are rapidly seeing their beers displayed in Triangle stores. The kickoff party was April 25th from 6 p.m. to 10 p.m., and then the event continues today from noon, April 26th, from noon to 8 p.m. with food trucks and live music. Brewgaloo began in 2011 with 4,500 people. By 2019, the event surged to around 60,000 people. It remains one of the Triangle's showcase events, with Martin saying it will have about 800 kegs this year, and many will have their iconic photos taken with a cup of beer and the North Carolina Capitol in the background. As Martin quipped, it's a North Carolina law. She makes the jump to owning a bookstore. A former property manager has opened Daughter's Coffee and Books in the Greenwood Commons Shopping Center near Research Triangle Park. The shop is stocked with 2,000 books. Three-quarters of the books are used, owner Nicole Grinnell said. She noted that as a mom with a toddler, she wanted a space where she could grab coffee and hang out. Grinnell had worked in property management with her mom for 8 years, but they grew tired of the relentless nature of that business, and for Grinnell, that meant acting on her lifelong dream of opening a bookstore. Oakwood Pizza adds offering in former pizza joint. A place that was once the home of a well-known pizza shop is back in the game. Anthony Guerra plans to open a second Oakwood Pizza box at 1842 Wake Forest Road this fall. The space was formerly Capital Creations Gourmet Pizza, which closed in late 2023. The new location will be carryout only. Oakwood is getting so busy that some guests are getting frustrated with us, Guerra said. This is how we're solving the problem. National Builder grabs more land in East Raleigh. One of Old Raleigh's private getaways is the Milburnie Fish Club, where members relax by a private lake outside the city. But development is surrounding the bucolic spot, and now a national developer wants in the game. Lennar Carolinas, through a land bank, recently snagged 94 acres not far away on Old Milburnie Road. Lennar spent $19.4 million on the land, according to deed records. The property is already entitled for 257 single-family lots. That comes to $206,404 per acre, a hefty cost for a once quiet part of the Triangle. And finally, this zip leads Wake County for education. Raleigh's wealthiest zip code is also the most educated in Wake County based on the percent of residents with a college degree or higher. The 27608 zip, which includes Hayes, Barton, and Five Points, has a per capita income of more than $94,000, and more than 82% of people living there have... And more than 82% of people living there have at least a bachelor's degree. Nearly 35% have a postgraduate degree. That's according to a recent analysis by the Business Journal, which analyzed more than 12,000 zip codes across the nation. Rankings were based on the percentage of residents with a bachelor's degree or higher. The 27608 zip also ranks atop Triangle Business Journal's list of the wealthiest zip codes in the region. In Wake County, the 27519 in West Cary takes second place, with 78% of residents having a college degree or higher. Per capita income there is about $66,000. Coming in third is 27560 Morrisville, with 73% of residents having a college degree or higher, and per capita income of nearly $57,000. And now we turn to the top news stories in the Triangle Business Journal. The first one, written by Zach Ezone: Holly Springs plant scores $3 billion contract. Fujifilm strikes 10-year deal with New York-based pharma company. Fujifilm Diasynth Biotechnologies has landed a major deal for its massive Holly Springs facility that will come online this year. The company has signed a 10-year manufacturing supply agreement with the drug maker Regeneron Pharmaceuticals. The agreement, valued at $3 billion, will see Fujifilm Diasynth produce Regeneron's biologic medicines at its Holly Springs site, which has been under development since 2021. Details of the agreement are limited. Fujifilm Diasynth will provide U.S.-based production of Regeneron's industry-leading biologic medicines, according to a statement announcing the deal. Through this agreement, Regeneron says it will nearly double its U.S. large-scale manufacturing capacity. Regeneron is also expanding its operations in New York, where the company is headquartered. The companies did not say which specific medicines Fujifilm Diasynth will produce in Holly Springs. Regeneron's top-selling products last year were Dupixent and Eylea, and Eylea HD, generating net sales of about $14.15 billion and $9.55 billion, respectively, according to the company's annual financial filing. Fujifilm Diasynth operates as a contract development and managed manufacturing organization, working with pharmaceutical and biotechnology companies to produce biologics, vaccines, and other advanced therapies. The company in 2021 began building out a $2 billion manufacturing facility in Holly Springs. Last year, it increased the size of its investment to roughly $3.2 billion. The company expects that about 1,400 employees will work at the site by 2030. So far, Fujifilm has hired more than 500 employees for the Holly Springs facility, said Lori Braxton, Senior Vice President and Head of North Carolina Operations for Fujifilm Diasynth. Braxton expects the company to have more than 700 employees by the end of 2025. We have a really strong strategic workforce plan around making sure that we're scaling up and scaling out in terms of our talent and our hires, Braxton said. True Homes plans 311-unit subdivision in Roxborough. This is written by Ben Tobin. A mixed-use project may soon be on its way to a small but growing municipality north of Durham. Charlotte home builder True Homes has submitted an application to the city of Roxborough to build a 311-unit subdivision off Mountain Road, according to documents from the Person County Municipality. The application for a special use permit says the builder plans to use two non-residential parcels for future commercial use. The permit was slated to be voted on during an April 8 meeting of the Roxborough City Council, but John Ward, a partner with True Homes, said the item was tabled for a later meeting. Per the application, the 311 housing units will be a mix of townhomes and single-family detached homes. The project is proposed to span just shy of 140 acres. Local firm CE Group is serving as the civil engineer. True Homes has communities in Johnston and Harnett counties, as well as one on the border of Nash and Franklin counties near Lake Royal. Home prices start in the low to upper 300 thousands of dollars. The land is not owned by True Homes per Person County records and has a value of more than $600,000. Local craft brewery files for Chapter 7 bankruptcy. This story is written by Kate Tracy. Another local craft brewery has filed for bankruptcy. Brewprint Brewing Company in Cary filed for Chapter 7 bankruptcy this month. The brewery's last day in operation at its Kildare Farm Road location in the Mill Pond Village Shopping Mall was May 28 of last year, according to social media. Bankruptcy documents show the brewery's assets total $107,795, while its liabilities total $1.78 million. The brewery's revenue in 2023 was $244,028. For 2024, before closing in May, revenue reached $62,612. Brewprint's liquidation bankruptcy comes on the heels of another craft brewer in Cary filing to reorganize its debts. Cotton House Craft Brewers filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy with plans to stay open. Brewers in the Triangle do not have it easy right now as costs, including tariffs on aluminum, continue to rise amid changing customer habits. Gizmo Brew Works in Raleigh exited bankruptcy in September after filing last March. Eric Wagner, Brewprint founder and CEO, and his attorney, Sierra Rogers, with Waldrop, Wall, Babcock, and Bailey, did not return requests for comment. The brewery's largest creditor listed is Todd Schild, who is owed more than $1 million. In December, Schild won a lawsuit against the brewery for breach of contract and was awarded a judgment of $1,055,000. The second largest creditor is the U.S. Small Business Administration for the amount of $257,400. Documents also list a blanket lien from the SBA for $192,200. SBA loans have been tied to multiple bankruptcies in the Triangle in recent years. Wagner, a former water engineer, opened the first brewery in Apex in 2014. Wagner brewed a wide variety of beers, including pilsners, brown ales, IPAs, and lagers. And finally, Holly Springs weighs new entertainment district. Area around Ting Park could become sports entertainment complex for growing town. And this article is also written by Kate Tracy. While plans are advancing in Raleigh for a $1 billion sports and entertainment district around the Lenovo Center, another community in Wake County is weighing a similar project on a smaller but still significant scale. Town leaders in Holly Springs are mulling the addition of hospitality and entertainment uses around the community's sports complex. Ting Park, located between Highway 55 and Main Street north of downtown, includes an 1,800-seat stadium home to the Holly Springs Salamanders amateur baseball team, soccer center, tennis complex, pickleball and basketball courts, two playgrounds, and more. The town is looking to turn undeveloped parts of the town-owned park into a sports and entertainment district, complete with a hotel, restaurant, and retail space. Sean Ryan, planning manager for Holly Springs, said that over the past few years, a paddle club, a baseball academy, and others have reached out to the town about opportunities to build on the park. That prompted the town to create its own vision for the property. If we've got people coming to us and sharing interest in the park property, maybe it's an opportunity for us to take a step back and look at what assets we might have and how we might be able to best utilize them for the benefit of the town, he said. In November, the planning department approached the town council about exploring redevelopment opportunities. In February, the department presented two different conceptual plans to the council. Based on those options, the department put together a hybrid third plan that the council reviewed this month. The town renderings show a six-story hotel, parking deck, sports and entertainment facility, pavilion, and restaurant and retail space on a site south of the stadium. The sports and entertainment facility could house indoor sports courts or an arcade or other sort of family-friendly destination that just provides an opportunity to have other types of sporting activities at Ting Park, Ryan said. In 2023, Ting Park brought in 750,000 visitors. There are tournaments that happen. There are concerts that happen. Of course, there are baseball games that are happening there. And so it is really an ideal location for a hotel, Ryan said. And if not the Ting Park property itself, then maybe one of the properties around Ting Park, because there are just a lot of visitors that are coming to our community and are looking for places to stay. The town will seek requests for qualifications or RFQs from developers later this year. It's really just a way for us to communicate maybe what our vision is, but it's not necessarily setting the expectation for what we expect a development partnership to look like, Ryan said. The town is open to one or multiple developers being involved in the process. And now we turn to the reporter pages in the Triangle Business Journal, starting with Lauren Onosorge's page, Transportation and Technology. Factory could bring 10,000 jobs. California firm eyes North Carolina for production of sleek new jet aircraft. A next-generation jet manufacturer backed by Alaska Airlines is eyeing North Carolina for an expansion that could mean thousands of jobs. Jet Zero, based in Long Beach, California, is considering Greensboro's Piedmont Triad International Airport for a major manufacturing operation that could bring more than 10,000 jobs to the region, sources closest to the situation told Triangle Business Journal and its sister publication, Triad Business Journal. The company itself has not confirmed whether North Carolina is on its list of potential sites. Jet Zero is considering many locations for its future factory, a company spokesperson said April 22nd. The future factory will create 10,000-plus jobs at full-rate production. The company, which has the backing of a $235 million contract with the U.S. Air Force, has partnered with major aviation players, including Delta Airlines, and aims to compete against the likes of Boeing and Airbus in the commercial airline manufacturing space. Jet Zero is working on a futuristic, low-emission aircraft, partnering with BAE Systems, Pratt & Whitney, and Collins Aerospace for components as it builds out its prototype. A source close to the situation said Jet Zero is likely asking for top-dollar incentives from the state, the kind of sum that typically requires a line item in the state budget. Current drafts of the state budget released by lawmakers don't show such a project. Without significant state incentives, including funding for infrastructure work at the site, North Carolina would likely lose any chance at winning the project. The potential project came to light publicly last month when State Senator Gladys Robinson said at a business event in Greensboro that a manufacturer may bring 10,000 jobs to the region, Triad Business Journal reported. Triad Business Journal's David Hill contributed to this report. Lenovo navigates tariff uncertainty. How tariffs targeting China will impact Lenovo, one of the Triangle's largest employers, remains to be seen. The Chinese tech giant has what it calls a dual headquarters in Morrisville. The company has some 4,000 employees in the region, according to TBJ Research. But despite its major public persona, including naming rights for the Lenovo Center in Raleigh, Lenovo is being tight-lipped about the impact of President Donald Trump's trade policy. In the U.S., Lenovo is the third biggest PC shipper after HP and Dell, sliding in just ahead of Apple. A report out of Gartner this week shows Lenovo's U.S. shipments in Q1 increased 20.7% year-over-year. CEO Yongkang Yang told French publication Le Figaro recently that Lenovo had not yet estimated the impact of tariffs. While Trump has held back on tech products, Yang predicted that no one will be spared from this terrible situation. Yang said Lenovo's advantage is that it's a global company, giving it flexibility with its supply chain. Trump recently exempted tech products from China from tariffs. That came after reports that Lenovo and other firms had paused shipments to the U.S. Lenovo, which has 5,400 employees in North Carolina, declined to comment for this story. RDU's Main Street set for major revamp. Raleigh-Durham International Airport's own Main Street is about to get a revamp. John Brantley Boulevard, the road that loops between the airport's terminals, is about to be realigned, and the airport is looking for comments from the public. The long-planned project aims to ease traffic backups at RDU through the building of bridges and a reconfigured intersection with International Drive. The plan includes widening the stretch in front of Terminal 1 to 4 lanes, but it's also about creating more space for future capital projects by extending John Brantley Boulevard 350 feet to the north. The budget RDU passed last month earmarks $175 million for the project, putting it behind just the new runway, $1.1 billion, and the Terminal 2 landslide expansion, $775 million. In terms of cost, altogether RDU plans to spend $2.5 billion over the next several years on capital projects meant to support the airport's growing passenger volume. And finally, no show, no problem. There'll be an app for that. Gigi Stevenson and Anna Young had been friends for 10 years when Stevenson made the call a year ago. I called and I was like, hey, could we start a business around filing last-minute openings? Filling last-minute openings? She was like, I think so. It's been a whirlwind year for the Wake Forest startup that would become No Show Hero. Stevenson and Young are both moms with a limited amount of time, and given that companies are rocked by missed appointments, No Show Hero matches service providers such as hair salons, therapists, and house cleaners with appointment seekers. The company piloted its platform as a community on Facebook, but will soon release its app. So far, the company is completely bootstrapped. And now we turn to Kaylee Thompson's page, Real Estate and Development. Housing options to rise near Fenton, New York firm supplies key loan for Marigold Apartments project. A new apartment project in Cary has received more than $22 million in construction financing. BWE, a commercial and multifamily mortgage banking company out of New York, provided $22.3 million loan for the project near the intersection of Southeast Maynard Road and Carytown Boulevard. The Marigold Apartments, a mixture of affordable and market-rate units, is under construction with an anticipated opening date of early 2027. BWE worked with a developer, Charlotte's Laurel Street, to secure the Federal Housing Administration mortgage loan. It came in tandem with signing a ground lease with the town of Cary for the site at 921 Southeast Maynard Road and a loan from Wake County for $1.69 million. Of the 126 units, 64 will be reserved for those making up to 30, 60, and 80% of the area's median income. The remaining 62 units will be market rate. In addition, 7 of the units will be accessible units and 3 will be hearing impaired accessible. This is a unique and important development for Cary, which is in a particular need of new affordable housing supply, said Victor Augusta Jr., Executive Vice President in BWE's Raleigh office. Enabled by a robust partnership with the county and local governments, we were able to leverage the Department of Housing and Urban Development's Green MIP program to underwrite this transaction at market rate. Much of Cary's housing development, including the Marigold, has been in and around downtown. There are plans for 22 condos on East Chatham Street, 56 townhome-style condos at the corner of Kildare Farm Road and Byram Street, and 40 condos on Walker Street. The Marigold will be a four-story building with a mix of 1, 2, and 3-bedroom apartments. Prime Cary site goes back on the market. A property adjacent to the South Hills Mall in Cary is back on the market months after plans for a new sports complex hit a wall. The 9.5-acre site on Buck Jones Road, home to Grace Christian School, was slated for the town's $300 million sports complex, which is now indefinitely postponed, according to town manager Sean Stiegel. In November, voters in Cary rejected the town's park and recreation bond, which would have funded the project. Loden Development of Raleigh and North Pond Partners of Chicago have since withdrawn from a contract to purchase the site. Grace Christian School owns the property but plans to build a new campus in Apex and relocate. Lee & Associates Raleigh Durham is listing the Cary property for sale. The school is targeting a sale price between $15 to $20 million, according to Moss Withers, CEO of Lee & Associates Raleigh Durham. The school would lease back the property until 2027. The assessed value of the land and buildings, a 43,470-square-foot school and 12,000-square-foot gymnasium, is a little more than $12.2 million. Situated at the intersection of Interstate 40 and Interstate 440, it is being marketed as a redevelopment property, highlighting the mixed-use district zoning. Rockwood Group takes over apartment deal. A Chapel Hill project is moving forward with a new developer. The Chapel Hill Town Council recently approved a rezoning that was originally initiated by Trinsic Residential Group for a property at 200 South Elliott Road, northeast of downtown. The Dallas developer was planning to build Aura South Elliott, a 330-unit apartment building. The property is near University Place, but Trinsic decided not to follow through with the project despite already having invested $1 million, according to council member Melissa McCullough. In Trinsic's place, Chapel Hill developer Rockwood Development Group took over the project with a few tweaks. Those changes include requesting a zoning that is mixed-use village with conditions rather than the zoning Trinsic was seeking. During a meeting on April 9, the town council voted 7-2 to approve the zoning change. The previous zoning was residential 5 and office industrial 2. And finally, builder pitches 190 homes near golf courses. Land near two golf courses east of downtown Durham is flagged for development. National home builder M&I Homes has filed a rezoning request with the city for 4 parcels on Patterson Road north of Highway 98. The land is east of the Crossings Golf Club and west from Falls Village Golf Club. The home builder wants to increase the density to 4.8 units per acre. The current zonings allow 1.4 to 4 units per acre. A textual development plan filed with the rezoning request shows there will be 190 townhomes and attached homes, along with a commercial outparcel up to 3,000 square feet in size. Covering about 39 acres, the site is at 309, 353, 401, and 505 Patterson Road Its assessed value is about $1.6 million. And now we turn to Zach Ezzone's page on higher education. FHI looks for new revenue sources after federal cuts. Durham nonprofit scrambles to support its mission. Sheer unpredictability is how FHI 360 CEO Tessie San Martin describes a tumultuous past few months for the global organization headquartered in Durham. As the Trump administration has scaled back its investment in foreign aid, FHI has seen its revenue stream nearly cut in half as many of its federal contracts have been terminated. Any administration has the right to decide what's a priority and what is not, San Martin said. Disruptions always happen. I think I and others expected a fair amount of disruption, but this has been more destruction. Between February 6 and April 4, the administration terminated 81 of the nonprofit's projects, leading to an estimated 42% reduction in operating revenue for the research organization. As a result, FHI is terminating about 480 employees in the U.S., including 144 in North Carolina. The need for global health expertise will continue, irrespective of what this administration decides to do, she said. We will rebuild from there, looking for different partners, different funders to move forward as a smaller organization, but still as a vital organization, she said. FHI and its subsidiaries had revenue of $868 million for the fiscal year that ended in September 2023, according to its latest annual report. Before the cuts, more than 90% of the nonprofit's revenue came from the federal government, led by the U.S. Agency for International Development. FHI also receives funding from other federal agencies, like the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the National Institutes of Health. The objective is not for FHI to become a leaner version of the same organization. Instead, it is exploring ways to diversify away from its heavy reliance on the federal government. This means finding partners in the private sector or exploring other government donors or organizations like the United Nations. UNC Health CEO to step down in September. One of North Carolina's largest health systems and its associated medical school will see a major leadership change in the coming months. Dr. Wesley Burks, CEO of UNC Health and Dean of the UNC School of Medicine, will step down from these roles on September 1st after serving in both positions since December 2018. Burks will focus more on the development of a 500-bed children's hospital in the Triangle, which UNC is developing alongside Duke Health. Prior to his current positions, Burks was executive dean for the UNC School of Medicine, chair of UNC's pediatrics department, and physician-in-chief of UNC Children's Hospital. During his time leading the health system, UNC has expanded across North Carolina with the addition of hospitals, network providers, and new clinical and educational partnerships. It has been an incredible honor to lead UNC Health and UNC School of Medicine and to work alongside such dedicated, talented teammates, Burke said in a statement. When I started my career, I never imagined I would end up in this place and in this role, but I can't think of any better place to conclude my time as CEO and Dean. Dr. Christy Page, President of UNC Health Enterprises and Chief Academic Officer, will fill Burke's role on an interim basis. Biopharma agrees to merger, adds capital. A biopharmaceutical firm in Durham has reached a deal to become a publicly listed company as it nears a commercial launch of its lead product. Pelthos Therapeutics, that's spelled P-E-L-T-H-O-S, is merging with Channel Therapeutics, with the combined entity operating under the Pelthos name and focused on advancing its lead product, ZELSUVMI, that's spelled ZELSUVMI. The deal gives Pelthos a public listing and additional capital. Channel will acquire 100% of the issued and outside equity interests of Pelthos. The deal is backed by a $50 million capital raise. Pelthos is a subsidiary of Ligand, which in 2023 acquired some of Novan's assets as part of the Durham company's bankruptcy process. The assets included a topical gel that treats the viral skin infection Molluscum contagiosum. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration approved the treatment in 2024 under the brand name ZELSUVMI. And finally, Duke Health targets Mebane for hospital. Duke Health is eyeing another big step in advancing its efforts to expand beyond the Triangle. The health system, through a partnership with Novant Health, has filed an application to build a hospital in Alamance County. This follows Duke recently completing the acquisition of a hospital north of Charlotte. Duke Health and Novant, headquartered in Winston-Salem, want to develop a 46-bed hospital in Mebane on land Duke owns along Gregory Poole Lane. The proposed capital expenditure for the project is $225 million, which Duke and Novant would evenly split according to the project application. This is the first major move to come from a recent partnership the two health systems unveiled in March. And now we turn to Ben Tobin's page, Greater Triangle. Pinehurst number 11 to tee off in 2027. Pinehurst Resort plans another course on the sand mines. Get ready, golf fans. One of the most famed golf resorts in the world is creating another 18-hole course. Pinehurst Resort announced April 21 that its next course, Pinehurst number 11, will begin construction later this year and will be open for play by the fall of 2027. The course will be on the Pinehurst sand mines, the same 900-acre site in Aberdeen that holds Pinehurst number 10, which opened last year. Pinehurst representatives declined to comment on estimated construction costs for the new course. The course will be designed by North Carolina native and Wake Forest University graduate Bill Corr and two-time Masters winner Ben Crenshaw, a duo that worked on the restoration of the historic Pinehurst No. 2 course roughly 15 years ago. It's such a wonderful site just because of its inherent character, Corr said in a release. That character was essentially created. Not all of it is natural, but it has all been reclaimed by nature. This is land left over from all that mining from the 1930s. Pinehurst No. 10, designed by Tom Doak, represented the first new course to open at Pinehurst in nearly three decades. Pinehurst Resort President Tom Pasci said players should expect a different experience with Pinehurst No. 11 versus No. 10. The designs of No. 10 and No. 11 complement each other so well by contrasting so much, he said. Golf in the North Carolina Sandhills can be an experience unlike any other, and we believe the golf at Pinehurst Sand Mines will be a great representation of that. Also coming to the sand mines this year will be a 6,000-square-foot pro shop and locker room set to open in June. In August, Sand Mines Restaurant and Bar will be open for business, and plans for guest lodging on the property are in the works as Pinehurst continues to expand its hospitality options. Builder charts homes at lower price point. A local home builder is charting dozens of new homes with a relatively low price tag in a popular area. Strickland Hinton, an LLC that shares the Clayton address of real estate company Riverwild, purchased a little under 37 acres earlier this month off the intersection of Country Store Road and U.S. 70 Alternate in Johnston County for a little more than $1.3 million, according to Johnston County deed records. The land has a pine-level address and is zoned RS for residential subdivision use. Danielle Lance, the vice president of brand operations for Riverwild, said the company plans a new subdivision on the land. We're constructing a new neighborhood called Longleaf Village, Lance said. She said there will be 42 single-family homes starting above $300,000. The average home value in Johnston County for March was just shy of $341,000, according to data from Zillow. David DeYoung, vice president of Riverwild Development, said they'll likely begin building by May or June. Pine Level is an up-and-coming community with a lot of potential, DeYoung said. They have a small-town feel and available infrastructure, water and sewer, which makes for nice, compact residential neighborhoods. Townhome community sells for $24 million. Continuing a trend of out-of-state investors scooping up housing in eastern North Carolina, a New Jersey firm has bought a residential community in Greenville. Allen Ridge Apartments, an LLC that Secretary of State filings show shares the same address as Eminent Capital, purchased the Allen Ridge Townhomes neighborhood off Allen Road and Allen Ridge Drive for just shy of $24 million earlier this month, according to Pitt County deed records. It is on the west side of Greenville. The rental community consists of more than 120 houses and was built in 2023. The sale price comes to $200,000 per unit. Eminent Capital was founded in 2015 and looks to acquire multifamily assets, according to its website. The Allen Ridge Townhomes community features 2- and 3-bedroom houses for rent. Those monthly rental rates range from $1,600 to $1,850, according to Apartments.com. And finally, Texas Builder invests in Lillington again. The nation's largest home builder is back at it in what is becoming one of the biggest hotbeds for housing in the Triangle region. D.R. Horton is actively working on a new neighborhood in the Harnett County town of Lillington. The company spent $4.3 million earlier this month to acquire lots in the subdivision, according to deed records. The neighborhood, called Westerly, is north of Highway 421 off Matthews Road. Courtney Smith Gonzalez, city manager for D.R. Horton's Raleigh South Division, said the company plans to build 97 homes in total, with prices expected to start in the upper $300,000s of dollars. According to its website, D.R. Horton of Texas already has at least three communities in Harnett County. And our last reporter page is written by Kate Tracy, Retail and Restaurants. Home of Glenwood South Bar for sale. Owner wants yacht club to stay, but price is an issue for bar owners. The building housing a popular bar in Glenwood South is on the market, slide included. The 1,426 square foot space at 710 West Johnson Street, home to Johnson Street Yacht Club, and its signature slide has hit the market for $2.5 million. Basically, I'm selling properties in Raleigh and hoping to be retiring by the end of the year, said owner Tim Wood of Ohio's High Point Properties. Wood said he hopes that Johnson Street Yacht Club will buy the property. He said he only charges the yacht club for his expenses associated with the property and is in pretty massive debt over it. The Yacht Club opened in 2019, replacing the former Office Tavern. Partners Kim Hammer and Lewis Norton opened the bar together. But Norton, who now has 100% ownership of the bar, said the asking price is too high. We offered him fair market value, and that was rejected, Norton said. He added that the asking price of $2.5 million is unsustainable for a bar or restaurant to afford. The Yacht Club's building is on 0.15 acres and has an assessed value of $1.13 million, according to Wake County deed records. Our offer is still on the table, Norton said. Property records show that Woods LLC purchased the building in 2017 for $750,000. In addition to the Yacht Club building, Wood also owned property at 110 Glenwood Avenue, but has since sold it, he said. He owns 630 Hillsborough Street and had plans to develop it into a restaurant and pocket garden with Hammer's involvement. Norton, a resident of Raleigh for the past 16 years, said the Yacht Club was profitable in 2024. I don't want Yacht Club going anywhere, Norton said. Thomas Goodwin with Phoenix Commercial Properties is marketing the building for sale. Benson Bakery to open Raleigh location. A well-known bakery in Johnston County is coming to Raleigh. JP's Pastry, which has operated in Benson for more than a decade, has signed a lease for 2310 Bale Street in Raleigh, located just off Wake Forest Road near Costco Wholesale and Wegmans. The bakery will be open between late May and mid-June. It's time to bring it closer to our customers in Raleigh, owner Joe Parker said. I mean, they all drive out here. Everyone does. It's going to save a lot of people from making the drive. Parker and his husband, Iskander Flores, the bakery's director of finance and operations, like the location on Bale Street for its easy access to Interstate 440 and proximity to downtown and Raleigh Ironworks. The store will carry JP's baked goods, trucked in from its Benson production facility, as well as pasta imported from Italy and other retail items. The location will have marble bistro tables for indoor seating. We've actually been looking for a Raleigh location for probably a year or two, just haven't been able to find something that was suitable to our needs, Flores said. The Raleigh shop will be JP's third retail location. The bakery's second shop opened in October in Greenville. Convenience store looks to debut in Raleigh. A new retail development with a convenience chain and restaurant is in the works in Southeast Raleigh. Track West Partners of Atlanta has filed plans with the City of Raleigh to build three single-story buildings at 3511 Integrity Drive, located 5 minutes south of Coastal Credit Union Music Park. Plans indicate that one building will be a restaurant, one a drive-through car wash, and the third a convenience store. Plans show one building would be 5,600 square foot convenience store on the corner of Ardmore Drive and Jones Sausage Road with Dash In signage. Dash In and Splash In are sister brands of the Wills Group based in La Plata, Maryland. Splash In and Dash In have more than 50 locations in Delaware, Maryland, and Virginia, according to its website. There are no locations in North Carolina. Dash In stores feature a wide-ranging menu of baked goods, hot breakfast items, made-to-order sandwiches, and more. And finally, Holly Springs embraces new social district. The town of Holly Springs is the latest community to embrace the sip and stroll mantra that's taken hold in other North Carolina locales. In February, the Holly Springs City Council approved the implementation of a social district for certain sections of downtown. People can buy beer or wine from participating businesses for open consumption within a designated area. Mixed drinks and hard spirits are not allowed in the social district. It will go into effect May 2nd, just in time for the town's International Food Festival. The district includes the area around the Holly Springs Cultural Center and Town Hall. Businesses in the district can display decals to indicate whether they sell, welcome, or prohibit beverages. And now we turn to the viewpoint page in the Triangle Business Journal to read the guest column. It's written by John Hood, who is a John Locke Foundation board member in Raleigh. The headline, Uncertainty Will Hamper Growth. On April 2nd, President Donald Trump announced one of the largest tax hikes in modern times, pointing to a long list of reciprocal tariffs, in reality new taxes based entirely on differences between imports and exports, irrespective of cost. He proclaimed it Liberation Day for the American economy. A week later, having managed to liberate trillions of dollars in wealth from panicked investors, Trump made another announcement. Most of the new taxes would be paused for 90 days. The president retained 145% tariffs on Chinese imports, pre-existing tax increases on Mexican and Canadian goods, and a 10% tariff on all other imports. Economic crisis averted? Hardly. Even during this three-month grace period, the United States will tax imports at the highest level in generations. The administration is also promising selective escalations and carve-outs. Not surprisingly, businesses, investors, and consumers are wary. Jamie Dimon, CEO of J.P. Morgan Chase, told the Wall Street Journal that today's market dynamics have no recent parallel. It's a significant change we've never seen in our lives, he said. The resulting uncertainty has been damaging on its own, a California custom bike manufacturer told the Washington Post. My orders have certainly slowed. Why would someone in Japan or Australia or Canada order an American bike if things could change dramatically again next week? It's like everything is frozen, he said. The idea that policy uncertainty itself, as distinguished from the implementation of bad policy, can act as a damper on economic growth is nothing new. More than a decade ago, a trio of scholars, Northwestern University's Scott Baker and Stanford University's Nick Bloom and Stephen Davis, released the first in a series of papers that used patterns in news reporting about politics and business to measure policy uncertainty and then to link it to economic performance. Over the decades, they found increases in policy uncertainty in the U.S. were followed by declines in investment, output, and employment. Nor is the phenomenon an example of American exceptionalism. Our results suggest that elevated policy uncertainty in many countries around the world contributes to sluggish growth in recent years, they wrote. Even at the level of state and local government, the prospect of unsteady hands at the tiller makes some economic actors seek safer returns elsewhere. A 2016 paper in the Journal of Monetary Economics found that states exhibiting more policy uncertainty tended to post higher unemployment rates during the Great Recession. A follow-up study in 2019 suggested that where the trajectory of states' taxes on corporate income is unclear, there are fewer business starts and expansions. Here in North Carolina, one reason our economy has outperformed that of most of our peers is that fiscal and regulatory policies are clear and predictable. The General Assembly caps annual spending growth at a combination of inflation and population growth and typically adopts tax changes in phases. We also use formulas to guide decisions on such matters as incentive grants and transportation spending rather than entrusting too much power to individual policymakers. Washington should follow suit. First step, restore to Congress the power to set tax rates, including tariffs. And now turning to a general news item in the Triangle Business Journal, this one written by Kate Tracy. Jeweler to close location in Crabtree Mall, Bailey's to focus on other locations, including space it acquired in Charlotte. Crabtree Valley Mall is losing a bit of sparkle. After 15 years, Bailey's Fine Jewelry is moving on from the mall as it focuses on its other locations, company spokesperson said. The store will shutter once it sells off its merchandise at major discounts, according to its website. Despite the Crabtree closure, Bailey's has been in expansion mode recently. It opened a 5,000 square foot store in late 2022 in Fenton. This March, the jeweler acquired 70-year-old Morrison Smith Jewelers, based in Charlotte at 705 Providence Road. Founded in Rocky Mount in 1948, Bailey's is in its third generation of family owners. Its flagship store is in Raleigh's Village District. Bailey's also has a watch shop called Fox and Bailey in Village District, as well as other stores in Greenville, Rocky Mount, and Los Angeles. CEO Trey Bailey, grandson of founders Clyde Sr. and Ann Bailey, was not available for comment. A spokesperson for the company said in an email that the store's lease at Crabtree Valley Mall was ending and the company decided not to renew. "We have loved our time at Crabtree, and our location there has been very successful, but we're focusing attention on our newest locations in Cary and Charlotte at this time. We look forward to possibly being a part of the Crabtree Valley Mall community again in the future, as we know they have big and exciting plans ahead," spokesperson Lindsay Priester said. Although Crabtree Valley Mall is losing Bailey's, another jeweler, Diamonds Direct, is under construction on a new standalone showroom in front of the mall. Last year, the mall landed Chinese retailer Miniso, men's apparel brand Chubby's, Runway Brides, Lip Print Beauty Bar, and Eloise Collections. Meanwhile, Build-A-Bear Workshop is renovating its space, which is set to reopen next month, according to the mall. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the Executive Voice Q&A column, and this one will focus on Kim Mills. In a closer look section, title: Principal at Phoenix Commercial Properties, age 63, family, married, education, BA, communications, UNC Chapel Hill, first job, drove a school bus at 16. Working in talent management for 25 years enables Kim Mills to bring a unique perspective as a broker, particularly in representing tenants. "I tend to look at things from an employer's perspective," she said. "I walk in looking at space like, how is this location going to work for a recruitment? For your employees to want to come here, what kind of things do you need in a building and in a space to engage your employees, to attract them, to come here once you hire them, and to retain them?" While she excelled in the talent industry, her true passion was real estate, a business she has been interested in since she was a teen and put together the MLS notebook for the realtor mother of her high school boyfriend. So she switched careers in 2015. Despite making such a large career shift later in life, Mills has been a force in the male-dominated commercial real estate industry. "I feel like everything I've done led me to here, and I get to incorporate everything, so this is my encore career, and I'm just having fun," Mills said. "What challenges are tenants facing right now?" "With regards to office, there's a lot of space out there, and they can get better deals than they could before. It's much more of a tenant-favored market right now, whereas historically it's been a landlord-favored market. In retail, there's a lot less supply and a lot more demand, so tenants are facing challenges finding space for their retail operations. The same is true for the flex warehouse space. Although it's loosening up a little bit, it is challenging to find space. Those tenants are challenged to find space for their operations." Where are hot locations for companies that want to recruit talent? "Oh, they want to go to hip, high-end properties. There's a huge demand for trophy assets. We're seeing tenants reduce their footprint size to go to a trophy asset because the rents are higher there, but there are so many more amenities that are available for the tenants to share in common. North Hills is a hot spot. So is The Grove. Most of it is not suburban. Higher vacancy rates are more in the suburban area." What's this year going to look like for leasing? The industrial sector is booming. It's been a hot sector for quite some time. I see offices picking back up. More and more Fortune 500 companies are requiring their employees to come back to the office more than just 3 days a week. So we see leasing starting to pick back up in the office sector. Retail is strong if you can find the space. There are plenty of people out there who want retail, but there's so little vacancy. What is Phoenix Commercial focused on for 2025? "We've been in growth mode, and we're continuing in a growth mode. That growth is in project scope. That growth is in brokers. We're very selective. We call it our recipe for success, and every person is an ingredient to that recipe. And just like a batch of anything you cook, if you add the wrong ingredient, it messes up the whole recipe. So we're very selective about who we bring in. We're expanding our footprint as well. We've been in this space for 5 years, and it's been a great space for us. We sublease about 3,000 square feet from Warden Smith. We have outgrown the space about the same time they've grown as well. So we did a search, and we looked at a lot of properties, and we like this particular campus. It's convenient to everything. You can get just about anywhere within 15 to 20 minutes. We opted to move next door. We're moving into about 5,100 square feet next door, and we're in the upfit process right now, and so we're building with growth in mind. And this was written by Kaylee Thompson. And now we turn back to the Viewpoint page to read the editor's notebook. This is written by Rebecca Troyer, editor-in-chief of Triangle Business Journals. The headline, Atlanta Braves Fidelity Execs Headline TBJ Event. Last fall, Triangle Business Journal managers began brainstorming ideas for a one-of-a-kind, high-profile program in response to the overwhelming engagement and enthusiasm we've seen in recent years for informative, strategy-focused events for women in business. We tossed around numerous ideas for topics and themes and came up with the structure for our first-ever Empowered Women's Forum. We then set out to recruit a top-notch group of national and regional speakers, moderators, and panelists. We sought out women in a variety of sectors who have proven track records in achieving business goals. We recruited C-level decision makers who lead high-performing teams, and we chose women who have interesting career stories to tell. Our Empowered Women's Forum offers women executives and rising business leaders the opportunity to hear from these inspiring experts, all of whom have taken risks, navigated career challenges, and embraced opportunities similar to those many of us face as women in the once-for-men-only business world. The Power Pack program from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. on May 15th at the Umstead Hotel in Cary features keynote speeches, fireside chats, breakout sessions, and networking opportunities, all with the goal of sharing knowledge, experience, and energy that will help women be better managers and leaders in moving forward. And moving the greater Triangle economy forward. Above all, attendees are likely to get one-on-one attention with some of the most successful women leaders in our communities and beyond. Our lunchtime keynote speaker is Doretta Rhodes, Chief Culture Officer of the Atlanta Braves, a publicly traded company trading near its 52-week high stock price. And we'll have to stop right there, but the rest of the article mentions that there will be fireside chats, there will be breakout sessions led by moderators and panelists, all aimed at empowering women in the workplace. And we have run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. And if you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.